Referred to in that delightful little chorale number is Monitor, the program, and your obedient servant and host, Art Fleming. You know, we're due at a press luncheon at a Hollywood movie studio in a few minutes where we're going to hear about and from the star of the forthcoming movie musical of the Broadway hit, Mame. I believe you're kind of familiar with the lady, Miss Lucille Ball. But later, Joe Garagiola defends a team that walked out on its opponents, and he's going to tell you why. But right now, here's Bobby Darin with a very appropriate tune, just before we talk with Mame of the Movies, Lucy Ball.
You coax the blues right out of the horn, Mame. You charm the husk right off of the corn, Mame. Dixie back to Dixieland. Yes, you make the cotton easy to pick, Mame. You give my old man tulip a kick, Mame. You make the old magnolia tree blossom at the mention of your name.
A talented little guy, that Bobby Darin and Mame. Thank you, fellas. One of the biggest Broadway smash hit musicals of recent years is now before the cameras. The movie version of Mame. It's going to star Lucille Ball in the title role, and despite a broken leg she got while skiing not so long ago, she displayed confidence, enthusiasm, and happiness at being chosen for the role. She's a great gal. Met her many times, talked with her, and worked with her. She talked with Monitor reporter Tony Gilbert during a press luncheon at the Warner Brothers studio in Burbank, California, so let's hear it.
Lucy, I wonder what you think is the most challenging part of this role for you.
I think the flair is for me, kind of, especially with a broken leg. I mean, how much flair can you give with a broken leg? But it is healing. It is healing, and I'll be all right by the time we get around to all the dances and of course, the singing. I'm not a great singer, but they have done a fantastic job of fixing the songs so that I can act them rather than sing them. I think that's the most biggest challenge.
You have, as talking about singing, not only is everybody looking forward to hearing you sing, but we heard some of the one song from the forthcoming film, mm-hmm. Loving You.
Yes.
Well, tell us about the score.
Well, it's the score. Everyone is quite familiar with the score of Mame. It's been around for years. It's the same one. And the song,
will they use any new songs?
Just that one. Just that one new one.
Loving you,
yes. And didn't you think it was beautiful?
Lovely.
And Robert Preston has already recorded it, and he did a great, great job. Everybody's flipping over it. And it reprises itself throughout a nine-year honeymoon, which I think is every woman's dream, isn't it?
You know, I noticed Theodora von Runkel's beautiful costumes, which are displayed here. We might remind our audience that these are period piece gowns and dresses and so on.
29 to 39.
Do you think any of these will possibly set a new trend?
Well, they are already.
Really?
Oh, yes. They're wearing these cloches and these this length and these materials right now. Yes, I think the hairstyles are the different, is really the different look. When you don't put a hat on your head, then you really see the hairstyles of the era. And we have to do that through 29, 30, 31, 32, and gradually. And my hair changes color. I'm not a redhead in this movie until quite late. And I finish up even another color.
Lucy, I wonder, since you have done so much and get so much into a schedule that you have, both on television and now doing a feature film, have you any tips about how you relax?
Exercise are my only form of relaxing, and word games, when I can find someone to play with me. I swim and I ride and I do lots of things, but I don't feel right unless I exercise. And right now I'm exercising even more strenuously than I have for years because of my broken leg. But that really is it. I do lots of word games and reading and swimming and bicycle riding. And exercising, really exercising.
May I just add that you look just lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's Lucille Ball. This is Tony Gilbert for Monitor.
Well, it's no surprise to me that Lucy Ball keeps her cool by exercising. You know, if you ever spot one of those old reruns of the original Lucy show on TV, she doesn't look much different today than she did then. But a Lucille Ball with dark short hair for her main role? Boy, I gotta see that one.
Feel like the walls in your house are closing in on you? Discover how to open them up with a new look in the March issue of Woman's Day magazine, where you'll find 14 beautiful wall treatments from a Dollar Wise decorator, including painted landscapes. And learn how to simplify the chores you hate most with our special time and work-saving tips. There's also a nifty section on things to crochet, sew, needlepoint, and knit, from pillow dolls to sweaters. Complete instructions in the March issue of Woman's Day. Look for the cover with a chocolate cake you can make.
In the morning fun when no one will be drinking any more wine, I wake the sun up by giving him a fresh air full of the wind cup, and I won't be found in the shadows hiding sorrow, and I can wait for fate to bring around to me any part of my tomorrow, tomorrow. Yesterday when my plans were giggled in rhyme, I had a song while on the run, and its love brought a tear to my eye. Maybe someday you'll up and say we had a pretty nice time.
Lovely little tune, Helen Reddy, and the song was Peaceful. Well, talking about peaceful, it wasn't so peaceful at a college basketball game in the hills of California recently. But that's kind of getting ahead of Joe Garagiola, who's going to give you the whole story shortly, right here on the Monitor Beacon.
Thank you.
Well, my friends, here's more of Monitor, and if you've just joined us, you're right on time. It's just about 19 minutes after the hour. And here's something new from Glenn Campbell. The title seems to be the last word in Glenn's commitment. He says simply that, I knew Jesus. Cue card for the lyrics. I knew Jesus before he was a superstar. Now we're going to have Monitor Sports. And here's Giuseppe Garagiola.
Is it ever excusable for a basketball coach to pull his team off the court? Well, I'll be back with my thoughts on that right after this word from Travelodge.
You know, the other day a young fella said to me, said, I bet you traveling men got friends all over. I said, son, I got friends I haven't even met yet. Well, he laughed. But then I told him about Travelodge. Now, there must be 450 Travelodges in this country, and I've only been in half of them. But you let me tell you, I trust them all. Because I know I'm going to get a nice, clean room and a bed that's as comfortable as my very own. So next time you're out on the road, and the sun's getting low, and the world's getting a little bit heavy, then you just home in on a Travelodge. Let one of my friends take care of you. One of my 450 Travelodge friends.
It's not very often that I take a stand in favor of a coach who pulls his team out of a game and has them walk off before the game is over. But I find that I have to go along with the basketball coach at San Diego College, Bill Stanley. In case you missed the story, here's what happened. San Diego played San Bernardino Valley College in San Bernardino. Now, the San Bernardino team had not been doing too well. Their record was 5-15. In an effort to shake up his club, Coach Ray Blake added a couple of new players. Their names were Sue Palmer and Renee Ferguson. And San Bernardino was taking advantage in a recent law permitting girls and boys to be eligible to play varsity basketball. Now, whether it was the presence of the girls on the bench, I don't know. But San Bernardino really had a good night. they had a 29-point lead with 3 minutes and 12 seconds left when Coach Blake sent Sue Palmer into the game. The San Diego team had a little meeting, decided they'd had enough, and he walked off the court. Well, the other day I was discussing this story with a guy, and we both agreed the coach was wrong. The problem was that we each thought it was a different coach who was wrong. He blamed the guy who walked off. And I said I not only didn't blame the guy who walked off, but I would probably have done the same thing in his spot. Now, before you start writing to tell me that I'm a male chauvinist, let me assure you that I have nothing against women choosing to play varsity basketball. And I have nothing against coaches giving them a chance either. But I do object to the timing used by San Bernardino coach Blake. If he starts the girl, that's one thing. If he gives her her chance while the game is still undecided, that's okay. But putting her in with a 29-point lead and 3 minutes to play, that's just using her to show up the opposition. I honestly feel that if the move had been made with a 10-point difference in the score, I would have said that the other club was wrong to walk out. But 29 points down, San Diego had no chance to win, and San Bernardino was only adding insult to injury. As far as I'm concerned, walking off a court is one of the worst offenses in basketball. But to me, one that's even worse than that is unnecessarily showing up an opponent. And that's what he did by playing the young ladies. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
Hey, Joe, don't get all so shook. It's Sunday. Cool, calm, easy. And the carpenters are going to build another good one. Sing!
Sing, sing a song. Sing out loud. Sing out strong. Sing of good things, not bad. Sing of happy, not sad.
Carpenters and the whole gang sing. Kind of gives you a good, clean feeling all over. Just another listening reminder, though. I ask you to listen to the Carpenters because they've recorded live in concert and they will be doing it all Sunday evening, March 25th on NBC Radio. Oh, music has returned on Monitor. Renaissance and I'll Never Fall in Love Again. With a half-hour mark swiftly approaching another brief station break. And we're going to be right back, though, to keep your holiday weekend in a happy up mood. So don't go away. Stay right here. Art Fleming. Monitor music for the next 5 minutes, and it gets off the ground with David Bowie doing Space Oddity and then returns to Earth with Passport to the Future by Jean-Jacques Perret.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown, engines on. Check ignition and may God's love be with you. Time.
call me Good Time Charlie. Sweet music we got, and we can make it a sun-kissed weekend world for you. So that singing chorus was telling the absolute truth. Weekend world of the auto racing driver filled with speed, glory, and sometimes violent death. In a few minutes, meet a man who's both an auto racing writer and a driver, and who knows how it feels to be a so-called Sunday driver on the auto racing circuit. We're going to find out about it. But from Guy Lebeau, Richard Petty won the Daytona 500. Two records were set, money and attendance. Details later, and a word with Petty. Gail McCormick leads off with "It's a Crying Shame."
Love walk out the door. It's a crying shame. We don't have it no more. Love walk out the door. It's a crying shame. We don't have it no more. Reading your letter, I didn't know whether to call you up and talk again. When I saw the name you signed, going through my mind was a memory of way back when. Now all that I can wish you is good luck, baby. Sorry that it couldn't be me, 'cause it felt so right. If we held on tight, I'd be with you tonight. We never should have met.
McCormick, and it's a crying shame, really is. Hey, have you ever been interested in auto racing? Well, if you have been, you've probably asked yourself the question, why do they do it? Why do men risk their lives week in and week out while pushing four-wheeled machines beyond their speed and stress limits? Some of the answers are to be found in a new book titled Sunday Driver, written by Brock Yates. Yates talks about the book and his career with Monitor Sports editor Lynn Dillon.
Brock, you're a senior editor for Car and Driver, so I guess it's not unusual for a writer to write a book.
No, this really was kind of a labor of love, Len. I have been around racing for a number of years and felt that we'd all written about it from the press box, but to make any sort of a definitive statement about the sport, you really have to participate in it. But racing, there's a very wide gap. You just can't relate to it by driving down the expressway. You really have to get out there and do it, I'm afraid.
Well, you did the right thing. You realized your limitations and you did something about it. You enrolled in Bob Bondurant's racing driver school?
That's right, at Ontario Motor Speedway in California.
What did you find out about your driving ability?
Well, I found out that my concentration tended to lapse. In a 200 or 300 mile race, my concentration tended to not be as high as, say, Mark Donohue's or some of the really, really good drivers. Concentration seems to be the major factor in motor racing. You cannot let up. You must maintain an absolute maximum level of competitiveness, and you simply cannot cease to concentrate. I couldn't maintain it.
Do you feel that perhaps that was because of your inexperience?
Yes.
How many actual races, Brock, did you compete in after you got through with racing school?
I ran five events, Len, for a variety of reasons. I started out and ran a couple of very small amateur road races. I was fortunate enough to win two of them, which was kind of nice because it gave me another perspective, kind of ego-tripping a bit with a victory. And then went into the Trans Am Championship, which is a professional series for American cars of the Camaro, Mustang, Javelin kind of vehicles. Right. There are a lot of really good guys who are running, and I really got, I was put back where I belonged. I've managed to finish 11th in one race at Watkins Glen, and then I crashed at Michigan International, which another experience that I really wasn't looking for, but in retrospect, it was a good thing to have for the book. My wife went through some rather trying moments while I was
going to say, yeah, what was your wife's reaction to your doing this?
Well, she's really a great gal and understood that this is something that I had wanted to do and felt important in terms of being a writer, and she bore with me, but I'm not really sure if I'd said, okay, it's so great that I'm going to turn professional, this is my new career, we may have had some trouble.
Brock Yates, nice talking to you, and we wish you all success with your book, Sunday Driver.
Thank you, Len.
Len Dillon for Monitor Sports.
Thanks, Len. And by the way, one of the major car racing events of the year, the Daytona 500, was won by Richard Petty today at Daytona Beach, Florida. King Hussein of Jordan was among the spectators watching the 40-car field, and country and western singer Marty Robbins wrecked his car in a three-car pileup, but walked away unhurt. Guy LeBeau is going to report on the Daytona 500 later today. Meanwhile, though, it's not yet actually springtime in the Rockies. John Denver is going to cast a vote here for that wondrous and majestic mountain chain. It truly is. It's called a Rocky Mountain High.
He was born in the summer of his 27th year, coming home to a place he'd never been before. He left yesterday behind him. You might say he was born again. Might say he found the key for every door. When he first came to the mountains, his life was far away. On the road and hanging by a song. But the string's already broken and he doesn't really care. It keeps changing fast and it don't last for long. Say that he got crazy once and he tried to touch the sun, and he lost a friend but kept a memory. Now he walks in quiet solitude, the forests and the streams, seeking grace in every step he takes. His side has turned inside himself to try and understand the serenity of a clear blue mountain lake. Oh, simple thing cannot comprehend. While they try to tear the mountains down to bring in a couple more, more people, more scars upon the land. In the Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it raining fire in the sky. No, he'd be a poor man if he never saw an eagle fly. Rocky Mountain High.
John Denver's having a Rocky Mountain High, and I hope you're all having a Monitor High here on the Monitor Beacon. And in this day and age, it's a wise move to be forewarned and thus forearmed. Take tear gas, please. What are its effects on your eyes and skin? If you're caught in an area where tear gas is being used, what should you do? Well, some valuable advice on the subject is going to come up shortly when Barbara Walters checks in with more Straight Talk about your health. So stay with us for a few minutes, huh? Because we ask you to be on the Monitor Beacon. Well, my friends, Monitor continuing, and the time is now 11 minutes before the hour. And Art Fleming, your host.
Son of a gun.
Here's Carly again, working over that guy's ego one more time. You're so vain.
Yourself go by.
Kelly, and you're so vain. Well, next on Monitor, Bufferin presents Barbara Walters with Straight Talk About Your Health, produced by NBC in cooperation with the American Medical Association. Barbara's going to have some straight talk about the effects of tear gas in a moment.
You can wear boots or galoshes or bundle up like an Eskimo and still get a cold or the flu. There's no sure prevention and there's no sure cure. But when a cold or the flu makes you hot with fever, there is relief for that. And if you get those miserable aches and pains, there's relief for them too. Bufferin. Bufferin contains one of the most effective fever reducers known to reduce your fever as fast as any plain aspirin tablet. And because Bufferin contains a unique ingredient we call dialminate, it starts its pain reliever to your aches and pains twice as fast as plain aspirin. Dialminate also helps reduce the chance of stomach upset plain aspirin can cause. It's easy to catch a cold or the flu. So get Bufferin. It'll reduce your fever as fast as any aspirin tablet. And it'll start its pain reliever to those aches and pains twice as fast as plain aspirin. This year, be prepared with Bufferin.
And now here's Barbara Walters.
Since we're living in an era of confrontation, of demonstration, and activist activity, you could unintentionally and unexpectedly find yourself in an emergency situation. Tear gas suddenly fills the air. What do you do?
Go away. That's number one. There's no sense in hanging around just because you're curious, because tear gas, and no one's immune from tear gas, if you get tear gas, you are very uncomfortable.
Our expert is Dr. Arthur Frank, co-author of the People's Handbook of Medical Care.
Probably the best thing to do is to wash your eyes with copious amounts of water. Now, this is one of those circumstances where it is not a good idea to rub your eyes. Now, tear gas is not a gas. It actually is a fine mist of tiny little particles that are dispersed. And those tiny little particles get all over you. You may feel it first in your eyes, but they're all over you. They're on your hands. They're on your clothing. And if you wipe your eyes with your hands or rub your eyes with your hands, you're just going to compound the problem. You're going to make it more difficult and more uncomfortable for yourself. If you want to wipe your eyes, the first thing you ought to do is wash your hands and wash them carefully and thoroughly with a lot of water. The best treatment for tear gas is a lot of water, copious amounts, over all parts of you that have been exposed. And if you've been exposed to anything more than just the faintest whiff of tear gas, you probably ought to change your clothes and put those clothes somewhere outside, because they contain a lot of tear gas, the mist itself also, until the mist disperses or evaporates from the clothing itself.
The effects of tear gas are not limited to the eye, however. Your skin can become irritated, and your lungs and cardiac arrest could occur.
It can be dangerous, particularly in the very young infants, in the very old, who have a decreased capacity to deal with large doses of tear gas, or possibly a decreased respiratory reserve. Their lungs aren't as healthy as they used to be. It's a very dangerous weapon in a group of people who are trapped in a room with tear gas and have no method of getting out. The people who use tear gas effectively never trap their victims, because to trap their victims will create serious trouble in their victims and will not disperse the crowd. So that if you're in a closed space and you are subjected to tear gas, then complications, respiratory complications, cardiac complications, eye complications can easily develop in addition to your extreme discomfort.
Timely advice from Dr. Arthur Frank, co-author of the People's Handbook of Medical Care. This is Barbara Walters with Straight Talk About Your Health, which is brought to you throughout the weekend by Bufferin.
It's easy to catch a cold or the flu with aches and pains and fever. So be prepared with Bufferin. Bufferin has dialminate to start its pain reliever to your aches and pains twice as fast as plain aspirin. And because Bufferin contains one of the most effective fever reducers known, it also reduces your fever as fast as any plain aspirin tablet. This year, be prepared with Bufferin.
Next weekend, more Straight Talk About Your Health presented by Bufferin.